So welcome to session 223. This session is titled Postpartum Depression and Beyond, an LDS Perspective. So I want to remind everyone to have our cell phones turned off or silent, and that we do encourage a dialogue of thoughtful and respectful listening and also engaging after the presentation. This session is being recorded, so please bear that in mind during the question and answer time as well. I'll have a mic for you to come forward and ask your questions or make comments. We want to ask you to consider subscribing to Sunstone Magazine, and you can take care of that at the registration booth at your leisure. Also, check out the bookstore. It's just down the hall. Lots of exciting things down there. This session is 60 minutes, so we ask everyone to be mindful of our time constraints so that we can be out and have this room open for the session that follows. Postpartum mood and anxiety disorders affect hundreds of thousands of women. In addition to providing a basic overview of PPMD, this session will explore how LDS culture currently makes it difficult for PPMD sufferers to seek help. We'll also discuss ways church leadership, organizations, and members can promote PPMD education, combat its stigma, recognize its symptoms, and offer support to women and families who are surviving or have survived PPMD. Our presenter today is Esther Dale. She is a Mormon feminist, postpartum mood and anxiety disorder survivor, advocate, and blogger at Through the Tunnel and Postpartum Progress. So we welcome Esther here today.
Hi. I'd like to start with a little bit of a trigger warning. It's up on the screen, but I just want to make sure everybody is aware. This presentation will include discussion of what can be some difficult and triggering topics, including but not limited to postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, specific symptoms of PPMD, suicide and attempted suicide, pregnancy loss, pregnancy termination, and infant loss. If you're feeling sensitive to any of these topics, you may want to consider attending a different session. Of course, there's absolutely no judgment for that. And if that is you, please know that you are loved, and I'm more than happy to chat with you at some other point throughout the symposium. I'm very excited to be here talking about this today. And let me know if you can't hear me, or if I talk too fast, or if I get in the way of the screen or something. Postpartum mood and anxiety disorders are something that's very dear to my heart. I did suffer from several postpartum mood and anxiety disorders after the birth of my first child, and it was an extremely difficult time. It was made more difficult by the fact that I didn't know how common it was, and I didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about it. I thought that I was just some crazy woman, and I'm this failure, and nobody understands what I'm going through. So through that experience, I've become very passionate about this. I started blogging after my hypothyroidism was diagnosed, at my own blog, which is Through the Tunnel. And then eventually I moved on and was also able to become a blogger at Postpartum Progress. Let's start by talking about a basic overview of PPMD. PPMD stands for Postpartum Mood and Anxiety Disorders. These are mood and anxiety disorders which first occurred during the first 12 months after giving birth or having a pregnancy end. This can occur after a live birth, a miscarriage, a stillbirth, or a termination of an otherwise viable pregnancy. Postpartum mood and anxiety disorders do not have to be diagnosed in the first few months. It can be any time during that first year. And this is actually something that I hear misconceptions about a lot. I'll hear people saying, oh, well, you know, my friend's having a hard time, but her baby's already 9 months old, so, you know, it couldn't be postpartum depression or whatever. Unfortunately, even a lot of doctors are not very aware of this fact and will kind of blow it off if a woman who's past the first 2 or 3 months is coming in saying, I'm having issues with this. It also does not necessarily automatically go away once you hit that 12-month postpartum mark. The 12-month period is just when it would need to first pop up in order to fall under that umbrella of postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. It can go on and last a while. I've known women whose postpartum depression didn't even clear up until their baby was 2 years old. Postpartum mood and anxiety disorders are something that you can't automatically tell someone has it by looking at them. Those of us who suffer from postpartum mood and anxiety disorders are often very good at hiding it. And that, a lot of times, ties in with the stigma that's associated with it. You know, we're feeling these pressures of, you know, this isn't normal, and nobody understands, and everybody's going to think I'm crazy, and so I have to look right, and, you know, if I look good, you know, everybody will take me seriously, and it can also tie in with denial. For me, it was, I don't want anything to be wrong, so as long as I look good, I'm okay. And so a lot of times what I'll hear is, well, she looks like she's fine. She must be fine. And that is a big misconception that needs to be cleared up. Postpartum depression is the most commonly reported and diagnosed of the PPMDs. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention states on their website that a CDC survey found that 8 to 19% of women reported frequent postpartum depressive symptoms. Postpartum Support International, which is another great organization that specifically focuses on supporting families dealing with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders and about educating the general public, states that approximately 15% of women experience significant depression following childbirth. The percentages are even higher for women who are also dealing with poverty and can be twice as high for teen parents. 10% of women experience depression in pregnancy. In fact, perinatal depression is the most common complication of childbirth. Postpartum Progress has done a lot of work in examining these statistics. And one of the things that has been discovered is the numbers from the CDC come from only the self-reported cases. And so I've actually got a quote here. And I'm sorry, I'm a little bit short on space up here. Let's see, I gotta find it. I'm sorry. Let's see. Okay. There were approximately 4.3 million live births in the United States in 2007. This statistic does not include fetal losses, including miscarriages and stillbirths. The National Vital Statistics Report indicates that the total number of clinically recognized pregnancies is around 6.4 million. This is important to know because all postpartum women are susceptible to postpartum depression, regardless of the pregnancy's outcome. So let's split the difference between the high 20% and low estimates of PPD, 11%, and say that an average of 15% of all postpartum women in the U.S. suffer, as the CDC reported in its 2008 PRAMS research. And let's use the number of clinically recognized pregnancies and not live births. This would mean that each year, approximately 950,000 women are suffering postpartum depression. But did you know that the CDC's research only reflected self-reported cases of postpartum depression? How many women do you think did not mention they had PPD out of fear and shame? Should we increase the estimate of sufferers to 17% or 20%? Also, these numbers don't take into account women who may have suffered other perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, like postpartum OCD or postpartum psychosis. That should make the numbers go even higher. I'd argue that the average number of new mothers who experience perinatal mood and anxiety disorders is more likely in the 20% range, which would mean around 1.3 million annually. And that's only women in the United States of America. And if we take into account what that could mean for the rest of the world, every time I think about that number, okay, I'm about to cry. I didn't want to cry, but I wore my waterproof mascara. I think about that number, and I think back to how terrible it was for me. And the idea of 1.3 million women just in the United States going through that darkness and that shame, and the number of those women who are suffering in silence, who don't feel like that they can talk to even their doctor or their best friend or their husband. I didn't even feel like I could talk to my husband or my mom about it. You know, that should be very sobering to us. Postpartum depression is the most commonly reported and diagnosed of the PPMDs. If we go back to just the cases considered by the CDC, that would be new cases occurring in at least 600,000 women each year. And that is actually more new cases of postpartum depression each year than breast cancer that's diagnosed. And, you know, just to kind of put it in perspective, and again, this goes back to how much we don't talk about postpartum depression. You know, we have an entire month in the United States that's dedicated to breast cancer awareness. Everybody knows October is the pink month. You know, we have NFL teams that wear, you know, pink tennis shoes or pink jerseys, and there's pink merchandise. Everybody is talking about it. And yet we have so many more women each year who are suffering from postpartum anxiety disorders, and yet we have this silence about it. And that kind of goes back to this stigma that I think we'll talk a little bit more about later, but it just, you know, that comparison just was mind-boggling when I sat down and realized it. Symptoms of postpartum depression include, but are not limited to, significantly increased or decreased appetite, feelings of guilt or worthlessness, exaggerated mood swings, insomnia, sleeping more than usual, thoughts of hurting yourself or your baby, and many others. And it's important to note that postpartum, really all the postpartum anxiety disorders, the symptoms do not look alike in all women, and the symptoms don't even look alike in the same woman from case to case. Some women might present as, you know, wanting to sleep all the time. Some women might never feel like they can sleep. And some women might go back and forth, and, you know, one week they just can't get out of bed, and the next week they're not getting any sleep at all. And so that's something that we have to keep in mind, is that when we look at these symptom lists, those are lists that are helpful, but it's not something to assume that it's limited to this or it always looks the same way. Postpartum depression is often confused with the postpartum blues or the baby blues. The symptoms can be identical, but the difference is that the baby blues appear and disappear within the first 2 to 3 weeks postpartum. And I have experienced that with every single one of my pregnancies. And it's the most frustrating thing, because one second you're sitting there and you're holding your baby and, oh, he's so cute. And the next second you burst into tears because the AC turned on, or the cat jumped on the bed and disturbed you, or even, I don't know why I'm crying. And it's just this mood swing, and that's associated specifically with the fluctuating hormone levels as your body adjusts to not being pregnant anymore. But again, the baby blues would disappear by 3 weeks postpartum. And so if you have a woman who's experiencing these symptoms and it's been more than 3 weeks since the end of her pregnancy, she needs to be told that this is probably not the baby blues anymore. This is not something that you need to brush off and go, oh, you know, it's just the baby blues, it's just the same old thing everybody goes through. Once you pass that 3 week mark, it's a lot more serious, and you need to go talk to your doctor. And if they don't take you seriously, you need to yell at them and go find another doctor who will. And I just wanted to throw something out there with the blues real fast. Last year, I had an experience where I experienced a missed miscarriage of twins that I was carrying as a gestational surrogate. And one of the things that I had not at all expected was that my body and hormones were going to go through the exact same changes after that as after my own pregnancies and live births. My body was not miscarrying on its own. I ended up having to go into the hospital and have a D&C. and that is not scriptural kind, you know, that would be a DNC to end the pregnancy. And I got home, and a few days later, I'm sitting there, and I had expected to be very upset, because I'm dealing with the grief of the miscarriage. That's kind of complicated by the fact that it's a surrogacy, so there's extra, I feel guilty because this was someone else's babies. And I'm sitting there, and I expected to feel upset. I didn't expect to feel the ups and downs. And I'm sitting there, and one second I'm fine, and the next second I'm upset over nothing. And I talked to my mom about it. I was like, this is so weird. And she told me, your pregnancy just ended. It may not have had the same end as your own pregnancies that ended in live birth, but your pregnancy still ended, and no matter what the result is, you're still going to go through those hormonal fluctuations. And so I feel like that's something that we need to be aware of. I think that goes back to what I was talking about earlier, is that the baby blues or any of the postpartum mood and anxiety disorders that last longer, those are not limited to live birth. Those absolutely can be and are experienced by women who are dealing with a pregnancy loss. It can be the termination of a viable pregnancy. It can be there was a live birth and then, you know, SIDS or some other type of infant loss. And those actually can be risk factors that increase the risk of suffering from postpartum mood and anxiety disorder, is having one of these traumatic events happen. One of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot is that dads can also experience postpartum depression. And you wouldn't think it because, you know, he doesn't have the same hormonal stuff going on, but he still has a lot of the same factors. There's a lot of the same social factors. He's dealing with the change in becoming a parent, sleep deprivation, which is a huge contributing factor to symptoms of postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. And the CDC website tells us that approximately 4% of fathers experience depression in the first year of their child's life. And by a child's 12th birthday, 21% of fathers will have experienced one or more episodes of depression. And risk factors for this can be younger fathers, a history of depression, lower education, and income. But of course, you don't have to have any of those risk factors for dads and for moms. It can happen even if you have no risk factors whatsoever. You can have a perfect history of mental health. You can have a perfect medical history. Your entire family can be in perfect health. You can have nothing crazy going on, you know, be getting lots of sleep at night, and still end up dealing with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. And it's also important to note here that postpartum mood and anxiety disorders are not something that is caused by anything that the mom or dad does. When someone is suffering, let's say postpartum depression, that is in no way, shape, or form their fault. They did not do anything to cause that. It's not that, you know, they sinned, or they didn't pray enough, or they did this or that. It's not anything that they did at all. Postpartum psychosis is one that gets talked about a lot in the media without actually getting talked about. postpartum psychosis is a much more severe disorder than postpartum depression, but it is often mislabeled as PPD, especially in the media. And this is usually, we'll see these extreme cases where, like with Andrea Yates, or, you know, any of these other mothers who end up killing or trying to kill their child, the media talks about, oh, postpartum depression. That's not postpartum depression. That's, I would say 99% of the time, although every single case that I've ever read of, that's been postpartum psychosis. And postpartum psychosis is an actual psychotic break in your brain that's occurring during that postpartum period. Symptoms may include seeing things or hearing voices, delusions, paranoia, hyperactivity, and feeling as though outside forces are controlling you. It's been reported that it may be something like, I felt like the devil was trying to take over my child, so I thought about throwing my child out the window to save him from the devil because it was easier to, you know, it was better for the child to die than to not be, you know, taken over by the devil. That's an actual story from one of my friends, and she did go get help and nothing bad happened. But that's the type of thing that you're dealing with postpartum psychosis. And when you have this mislabeling of postpartum psychosis as postpartum PPD, that kind of contributes to the stigma of both of them, and it absolutely leads to postpartum mood anxiety disorders not getting reported. In my own case, I had postpartum depression when my oldest was a baby. And I didn't go in and get help until she was 3 months old, and I found myself contemplating ways to kill myself. And a big part of why was, aside from, you know, kind of thinking, oh, this is just the normal stuff, I was worried that everyone was going to think that I'm a monster. And I actually told the nurse at the emergency room when I went in, I said, I am so worried the CPS is going to come take my baby away because of this. And thankfully, I had a nurse who was very compassionate and that had actually experienced postpartum depression herself, and she was able to reassure me, no, you know, that's not the case, unless there's some issues with a CPS worker doing things wrong. CPS is not normally going to come in and, you know, take your baby away just because you're dealing with postpartum depression. So if you're talking to somebody and they're expressing this as a concern and that's part of why they don't want to get help, reassure them that this is normal and that that is not something that should stand in the way of their seeking medical attention. Postpartum anxiety is generalized anxiety that occurs during that 12-month period. Generalized anxiety symptoms may include constant worry, and then physical symptoms including hot flashes and dizziness. Postpartum panic disorder is described by Postpartum Support International as a form of anxiety with which the sufferer feels very nervous and has recurring panic attacks. Panic attacks may include experiencing shortness of breath, chest pain, claustrophobia, dizziness, and heart palpitations. And that can be an extra layer of scary for a woman who's dealing with postpartum mood anxiety disorders, when that just kind of takes over your body and you've got these physical symptoms going on and you're just sitting there and you're having trouble breathing and I can't even get up and talk to anybody. And there are medications that can help with that that are safe for women to take. Postpartum OCD is postpartum obsessive compulsive disorder. This is one that often gets misdiagnosed as postpartum depression. And that actually happened with me. I did have some postpartum depression going on, but I also had postpartum OCD. And what happened is that with postpartum OCD, one of the classic symptoms that we hear in the blog and kind of online advocacy community, one of the most common symptoms that we hear talked about is intrusive thoughts. And the intrusive thoughts are often mislabeled as suicidal or homicidal ideations. And what's happening with intrusive thoughts is this can be something like you'll get these absolutely terrible mental pictures or thoughts that just flash into your head. And in my case, it was the stairs. I was so terrified of the stairs and of these thoughts that would come into my head or these pictures of dropping my baby down the stairs or falling down the stairs with my baby that I actually would change my routine. If I was upstairs with my baby and I was dealing with this and I had an appointment that I was supposed to go to, if it meant carrying my baby down the stairs because I was the only one at home, I would change and cancel that appointment. So this is something where you have these obsessions and these compulsions and you have these intrusive thoughts, and it can actually cause you to change your activities. And unfortunately, these intrusive thoughts often get, like I said, often get mislabeled as suicidal or homicidal ideations. And so you might have a woman who's talking to her doctor about it, and if her doctor is not very well educated about postpartum mood and anxiety disorders in general, and especially postpartum OCD, he might say, are you having suicidal or homicidal ideations? And if he doesn't specifically explain that, she might go, oh, well, I had these thoughts about, you know, throwing myself down the stairs, you know, and even though it was actually intrusive thoughts, she goes, oh, yeah, I totally had that. And so that was a misdiagnosis that I ended up with. And one of the reasons that's important is that there are other forms of treatment that you can take with postpartum OCD to help deal with these intrusive thoughts. There are some kind of, I guess you could call it workarounds that you can learn, like with a therapist, where she can sit down and say, you know, okay, when you have these intrusive thoughts, stop and think about this. Stop and tell yourself this. You know, take that picture and change what you're picturing. And so when it gets mislabeled and misdiagnosed, you're usually not going to end up with that same therapy. And so she may still have problems with these intrusive thoughts. Maybe it gets, oh, well, her dosage needs to get adjusted, or, oh, it's just not working, or whatever. So it is important that we kind of recognize and talk to women about these differences. Postpartum post-traumatic stress disorder occurs after an event or series of events which is perceived by the patient as being traumatic. And it's important that we have that qualifier of it's perceived by the patient as being traumatic, because what I perceive as being traumatic during my birth, the nurse or doctor may go, oh my gosh, you were so overreacting. That was not that bad at all. And so it's important that we recognize that it's about how the woman perceives it. It's about how that feels to her and, you know, kind of what that's causing to go on with her, regardless of what anybody else thinks about the situation. This is often reported by mothers who experienced a traumatic birth. Difficult pregnancies or previous traumatic events can also increase a new mother's risk of postpartum PTSD. But again, that's not always the case. Symptoms may include flashbacks, nightmares, avoidance of anything that reminds the patient of the traumatic event, and hypervigilance. Prenatal anxiety and depression also kind of tends to fall under the postpartum mood and anxiety disorders umbrella, just because it's kind of the community that's best equipped right now to deal with it and talk about it. That would be anxiety and depression, which occurs while you're still pregnant. And the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, usually referred to as ACOG, reports that between 14 to 23% of women will struggle with some symptoms of depression during pregnancy. And it's important that we know this, because that prenatal depression is not always, but is often linked to postpartum depression. And so when we see women who are dealing with depression and or anxiety while they're pregnant, it's important that we note that, and that, you know, we be extra vigilant and extra aware of what they're dealing with afterwards. You know, that may be somebody that if they're just a little more sad than normal after they give birth, even if that wouldn't necessarily be cause for concern without the prenatal stuff, if they were having that prenatal, that may be something that you go, okay, you had it while you were pregnant, you need to go talk to your doctor. Symptoms are pretty much the same as with your postpartum stuff, which is persistent sadness, difficulty concentrating, sleeping too much or too little, loss of interest in activities you usually enjoy, recurring thoughts of death, suicide, and or hopelessness, and feelings of guilt or worthlessness. And there are treatments that women can use during pregnancy for this prenatal depression and anxiety. There are medications that a lot of doctors and midwives will feel comfortable allowing women to take during pregnancy. Obviously, I am not a doctor, so do not take this as medical advice. Don't go out and say, oh, well, she said it in her Sunstone presentation, so it's totally safe. Please don't do that. But, you know, let women know, if you know somebody who's dealing with this, let her know, don't listen to that Facebook meme. Talk to your doctor and do some research and talk to these organizations and find out, you know, what your options are, because there may be options for medication during your pregnancy or while you're breastfeeding that can help you. You don't have to suffer this, and it doesn't have to be a choice between getting help and medication and stopping breastfeeding. That, you know, that is not something that has to be an automatic occurrence. Postpartum mood and anxiety disorder risk factors include a past history of mental health problems, family history of mental health issues, underlying health problems such as thyroid illness and iron deficiency, sleep deprivation, stress, including financial and marital, which, you know, can often be increased when you have a new baby at home or after you've suffered from a pregnancy loss. Mothers of multiples, mothers who have babies that are in the NICU, socioeconomic factors, a difficult pregnancy, and a pregnancy ending in anything other than live birth. Treatment can and usually is successful. There's no guarantee that postpartum mood and anxiety disorders in one pregnancy means that it's going to happen in another pregnancy. I had trouble with it and had 2 hospitalizations during my first pregnancy, and my other pregnancies I was fine. So it's not something that's an automatic, it happened this time, so it's definitely going to happen every time. Treatment plans are going to depend on the individual patient and may need to be adjusted during the course of the treatment. And the same treatment plan is not going to work for every patient and may not even work the same for the same patient with each subsequent case. Some of the options may include medication, antidepressants, sleep aids, anxiety medication, etc. Women with a history of postpartum mood and anxiety disorders may want to start medication during the last weeks of their pregnancy. This is something that would need to be discussed with their care provider. But that's actually something that I've done in my subsequent pregnancies, just because it was so bad the first time, is once I hit the 38-week mark, I start on Zoloft, which is kind of a lower, less heavy dose of medication. But it's a prophylactic measure that my doctor decided was relatively safe during pregnancy. Therapy can be very helpful, and then diet and exercise can help some women. Maybe yoga might help. The thing to keep in mind is it's very important to not say, this worked for someone, this is guaranteed to work for you. Do not go out there and say, you have postpartum depression, here, use this essential oil, this will fix everything. Do not do that. If I hear about you doing that, I might come visit your ward and we'll sit down and have a not terribly happy chat about it. There are no guaranteed miracle cures. And that is one of my hot button topics that will get me blogging faster than anything, is if I see somebody on Twitter saying, this is guaranteed to work. No, it's not. Let me tell the entire internet why you're wrong, since you're telling them that you're right. And the first step with getting treatment is always to ask for help. And that's the hardest step. And I say that from experience. So that's kind of a general overview of postpartum mood and anxiety disorders in general. I wanted to specifically talk about it, though, also with regards to Mormon culture. Many Mormon women that I've spoken with have reported that they suffered from postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. Oftentimes it went undiagnosed. And I actually have experienced more of the Mormon women that I've talked to who have had pregnancies have told me that they suffered PPMD than non-Mormon women that I've talked to. So obviously this is anecdotal. But I and other Mormon women have seen kind of an increase in the rate of Mormon women who experience it as opposed to non-Mormon women in their lives. And I think we absolutely have some problems with our church culture that can perpetuate this. Some of the things that Mormon women have reported hearing that will go a little more in depth in a few minutes include, oh, just get a blessing. Well, you must be harboring sin. You should go to the temple, or you should go to the temple more. You should pray more. You should magnify your calling. The priesthood will help. Go lean on the priesthood. And then one of the ones that I got recently in a pilot study that I did through Google Forms, that I'm going to go more depth into in a minute, is someone said, it seems exclusively women who were abused or were sexually active at a young age who suffer from it. Chastity needs to be reinforced. I hit the roof. I closed it out. I texted a friend who had been helping me about this, and I said, I am seeing red. If I knew who said this, okay, it's probably a good thing I don't know who said it. This is not okay in any way, shape, or form. Aside from the fact that it's all sorts of wrong to equate sexual activity that is consensual with any kind of abuse, chastity has nothing whatsoever to do with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. There is no connection between the two. And this is absolutely something that I can see being a problem, because we hear all these teachings in our church about chastity everywhere, chastity in all things. And obviously at least one person in our circles has gotten the message that chastity even carries over to postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. And so I think when we focus so hyper much on that, that can become a problem. It obviously was for this person. So if you hear somebody say that, shut them down fast. So as I mentioned, I kind of used Google Forms to do a very informal, non-academic, not peer-reviewed pilot study survey, because I wanted to get the experiences of Mormon women. And a lot of times we are more inclined to be open about our experiences with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders when it's anonymous. You know, when we don't have to worry about, you know, is Esther going to remember that I said that? Is that going to affect how she sees me? Is that going to affect how she treats me? Are other people going to, you know, find out that I said this? So that anonymity, I thought, could potentially increase what women were willing to tell me. And I was blown away. I posted it in a few Facebook groups, and I want to say within a half hour, I had over 100 responses. In the end, I had a total of 269 responses, which I thought was not too bad considering it just went out across a few Facebook groups. And as we get into the numbers again, remember, this is not a peer-reviewed study. This is not going into a journal. You know, this does have some problems with it, in that I think a lot of women who answered this did so because they've experienced postpartum mood and anxiety disorders, and so they know this is something that needs to be talked about, and I want my experiences out there. One of the questions was, have you ever had one or more postpartum mood and anxiety disorders? 80.8% of the respondents said yes, 7.9% said not sure, and 1.1% said other. Only 10.5% said no. And even with a survey where I would expect the numbers to be skewed because of women answering this who have experienced it because they want to talk about it, that was still a much, much higher answer than I would have expected. I would have expected to see more than 10.5% saying a definitive no, I did not experience this. 79.5% reported postpartum depression, 50% said they had postpartum anxiety, 9.1% said postpartum OCD, 5.3% said postpartum psychosis, 10.6% said postpartum PTSD, 0.8% preferred not to answer, 8.3% said no history of PPMD, and then 3.4% said other. And so one of the things that kind of we noticed there is that there's a tie-in with women experiencing one or more postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. So just because you have postpartum depression doesn't mean you're also not experiencing postpartum PTSD. And we do see a lot of comorbidity with these, where women will be experiencing more than one thing. And oftentimes that kind of goes undiagnosed because doctors will even, you know, OBGYNs will go, oh, postpartum depression. We're just going to call it all postpartum depression and that's it. And, you know, we don't stop and look at what else is going on there. If she's got postpartum PTSD, medication might help the depression part of it, but she probably needs to be talking to a therapist who specifically specializes in dealing with trauma and PTSD, especially if she can get in with a therapist who specializes in postpartum PTSD. At the time of your PPMD, 82.1% said that they were active members, 3% said they were inactive, and then 5.3% said semi-active, 0.8% were former members, 3.8% were never members, 0.8% were non-members or former members with active LDS family. Nobody preferred not to answer. and then 6.1% said other. So we did see that most of the women answering this had some kind of connection with the Mormon Church, which was kind of what I was hoping for, since it was specifically geared towards that. And I wanted to read you some of the answers that I got, because these are the stories of the women who answered this survey, and I think they give some of the best feedback that we can hope for on what is the church doing right that helps, what is the church doing that hurt me, and what can the church do to help women, which was sort of really one of the main focuses on, you know, kind of how this tied in with the theme of the Mormon mind. One of the questions was there anything about Mormon culture and or doctrine that was particularly helpful to you, your family, during or after your PPMD? Some of the answers for that were families are forever, dealing with a second trimester loss, the LDS beliefs about eternal families and the afterlife were comforting, meals after birth, we're really good about that one, eternal perspective, it won't always be like this, support from a relief society, I thought that if I died, it would be okay because I'd see my family again. And that one made me almost cry, because that was, here's someone who's dealing with this postpartum depression and they've got this hopelessness of, I might die. You know, maybe they're clearly thinking about dying with this, but they're still, I've got this hope that I'm going to see my family again. And so that one really got to me. My ward wasn't aware of my PPMD, but they were very mindful of not overloading. I was released from my calling after the bishop suggested I could. The Relief Society was helpful with meals initially, more generic helping out of first-time mother stuff. I took comfort in knowing that I was never alone, that my Savior understood what I was experiencing. Grace, my visiting teachers and bringing meals. There was a talk by President Packer where he said he wished he could cut back on programs at church so that things would be easier on mothers, and I wept when I heard him say that. The talk by Jeffrey R. Holland, like a broken vessel, priesthood blessings from my husband, and just the gospel in general helps and helped me get through it. And that talk by Jeffrey R. Holland was one of the things that I heard over and over again in the answers to this survey, and that was something that I heard even after that general conference session, was how much people appreciated that, both with depression in general and especially from women dealing with postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. And so that one was very heavy, and to me that tells me one of the things that the church really needs to work on that could really help our women who are suffering is more talks at general conference, and probably also more talks just in our general ward meetings about mental health, and saying, you wouldn't tell someone with cancer to go pray more, so why are you telling someone with postpartum depression to pray more? It's still a medical thing. Conference talks on depression, studying the scriptures and talks for writings on peace and how I could feel God's love and would never truly be alone. Learning how to forgive and love myself like Heavenly Father does. Learning about my relationship to God and His love were incredibly healing. Bishops who were willing to cover the fees for therapy. And that's kind of a big one, was I heard several people say that was really helpful. I also heard women responding who said, my bishop wouldn't help me with therapy and I couldn't afford it on my own. You know, so that's really a big one that we can, you know, we can work on improving and that we can push women to go to their bishop about. Forever families ease their depression after two losses. Visiting teachers helping me reach out and get counseling after number three. Without them coming to me one-on-one, I wouldn't have let my guard down and asked for help. Divorce taboo helps me stay with my husband. Knowing that I would get the chance to raise my stillborn babies again one day. Church was the only place I ever felt relief. Women would hold my baby, even leave class and walk the halls with him when he was screaming, which was most of the time. Knowledge of my heavenly mother and feeling her strengthening presence was and continues to be a balm to my soul. A Relief Society meeting given by a local psychiatrist helped me differentiate between baby blues and PPMD. Plus, access to reduced-rate LDS family services therapy. The bishop gave me a referral to see a counselor not through family services, but an independently contracted counselor that was LDS. And so that's kind of another one that we can really take to our bishops and say, you know, this is something that we can work on to help our women who are suffering with this. And it doesn't have to just be limited to the LDS family services. You know, it can also be outside help. Another question was there anything about Mormon culture and or doctrine that was hurtful and detrimental to you and your family during and after your PPMD? This was really kind of where I started hearing the responses that got into a lot of this stigma that I had kind of been thinking about that we really need to work on combating. The overwhelming need to be overjoyed with motherhood at all times. And I heard that one, I went, yes! I do not always like motherhood. I have three small children, and there are days where I love it, and there are days when I go, would anybody like a free child? I'll send their diapers with them. Motherhood so often gets presented, especially in our church, as is this divine calling, and you know, this is your role as a woman, and you know, women are created to nurture, and you know, it's the happiest time of your life, and it's not always that way. And so that's really something that we can work on improving. I was told to seek a better relationship with my Savior rather than seek professional medical help, to just pray and read my scriptures and everything would be better, to keep a gratitude journal so that I could find the good in my days. All of that only made me feel guilty that I couldn't feel gratitude, and guilt that my relationship with the Savior was bad enough that he'd want me to feel that terrible to teach me a lesson. I was given all of that advice from church attending family and friends, along with people in positions of authority over him. Did that kind of make anybody else mad? Because that was very upsetting to me. Misinformation about what triggers PPD and the belief that having enough faith would heal the mental and chemical imbalances. Glorification of motherhood, that's one that I kept hearing over and over and over again, is motherhood equals priesthood hurts a lot. The lack of the support system, shaming over breastfeeding, which just isolates women more. The guilt that I wasn't doing enough. And then I also asked if there's anything they wish they could tell the LDS church about PPMD in general or your specific experience. And the things that I kept hearing over and over again was, stop telling us that this is what we're called to. Stop teaching us from a young age that this is what we're called to and that we're supposed to have large families and lots of babies, because that doesn't always work and that makes it worse. And one of the things that I also kept hearing over and over again was, we need to hear about this in church. We need to hear about this in general conference, Relief Society conference, Relief Society meetings and activities, and sacrament meetings. We talk about all sorts of issues that aren't specifically related to, you know, the gospel per se. We spend all of this time talking about pornography. Why can't we also talk about postpartum depression? I would love to see a fraction of the time and energy spent in the LDS church that's spent on talking about how to defend and strengthen the families and fight gay marriage and fight pornography, just a fraction of that spent talking about postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. We talk so much about how much we love and value our women and how important women are and how important motherhood is. How is it that we're not also talking about this issue that affects so many of us and how we can help both in terms of comforting and supporting and in terms of how to provide that practical help of, do you need meals longer than just the first week? You know, your baby's 3 months old, do you need help with your laundry? Do you need help with your meals now? You know, how are you doing? You know, where's the Relief Society activities about, you know, this is the difference between the different postpartum mood and anxiety disorders. I would love to hear one about that instead of 50 about how to make aprons. You know, so there are a lot of ways that we can improve and help families. We talk so much about strengthening families, and this is an area where we're failing. I had 269 responses worth of these, and I had almost every single one of those had answered something that the LDS church members, culture, and their doctor did or said that hurt, and things that they wish they could tell the church to improve. I didn't have that many on things the church is doing right. And of the ones the church is doing right, it was almost always related to, you know, helping with my baby, bringing my meals, letting me know that I'm loved, and talking about, like, eternal families and how that helps. So I wish so much that I could go through and read every single one of these just to impart the gravity and the seriousness of this issue and how much it's affecting women in our church. If there are 1.3 million women, or even just 600,000, which is still kind of a mad and staggering number, and that's new cases each year, and that's in the United States, how many of those are Mormon women? How many of those are women in our congregations, in our Relief Societies, who need more help than we're giving them? How many of those are women who need to hear that if you don't like motherhood, it's okay? If your birth wasn't a perfect experience where you heard angels singing and glowing light, if it was traumatic for you, that's okay. If you need to talk about this and get help, that's okay. How many of our women and families are hurting over this issue? You know, and so what I really want everybody to take from this is, A, how prevalent this is, and obviously not just with Mormon women. I mean, you know, be aware of this with everyone in your life. But what I really hope everybody will do is leave Sunstone and go home and think about, how can your ward help women in this area? What can I do to help the women in my ward? What can I do to help the women in my stake? Go talk to your Relief Society presidencies and say, hey, so this woman did this presentation. Here's her contact information. Let's see about doing some stuff about this. I would be more than happy to send that PowerPoint presentation and my notes and the survey answers to anybody who wants it, if that would help in doing, you know, doing a session on it, if that would help in doing a Relief Society lesson or activity. Go talk to your bishoprics. You know, tell them, this is out there, this is happening. It happens a lot with Mormon women. What are we doing for them? When you have a woman or a man who comes to you saying, our family is dealing with this, what is our ward doing to help them? Here are some ways that we can do this. You know, go to your bishoprics and ask, you know, when it's getting to be about Mother's Day, maybe instead of doing all our talks on the divine role of women and the divine nature of motherhood and motherhood equals priesthood, can we also get somebody to talk about how sometimes being a mom really sucks and Mother's Day isn't happy for everybody and pregnancy doesn't always end well for everybody, and what can we do to help these people? I don't know, maybe write up to the general authorities and say, this is an issue. Can we get more talks in the Ensign and more general conference talks about this? go home and think about what you can do and what your wards and stakes can do to help women. And just be aware that this is an issue. And talk about it on Facebook. Post on Facebook, wow, did you know that at least 600,000 new cases of postpartum depression will be diagnosed this year? That should get people talking. When they say that, say, oh, go talk to Postpartum Progress. Go talk to Esther Dale. Go Google it. It's out there. Go home and think about what you can do about this issue. And when you hear people saying these hurtful things, shut them down. Tell them, you don't know what you're talking about. You need to stop because you're making it worse. Thank you.